The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Morning somewhere out there where you all are listening. Okay, just a tremendous amount of texture going by in the news headlines, lots of different kinds of things. It is anything but mundane, boring. What we're seeing here is the end of a way of life. I'm talking about white Western Christian culture, civilization, however you want to phrase it. It's all being taken down, and there's nothing it's going to be able to be done to stop it. J.P. Morgan abruptly freezing customers' bank accounts right now and discriminating against clients without warning. There have been complaints to, I believe it was 19 police agencies in 19 different cities and states. Crazy. So it's just not going to stop. You've got to really buckle up, and I don't know who better than to give us advice and counsel than Mike McGill. All right, Mike is back, and let's find out what's on his table. Hello, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Jeff. How are things?
Yeah, right.
Everything is really, really dicey. I know right now the world Juden Press, I guess you could say, is working triple time to try to justify that the war in Ukraine and Bakhmut, which 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers died in, at the behest.
Is that the latest guesstimate? 100,000
something like
dead
that. It's just absolutely enormous.
Think about it.
They're trying to spin that into a victory somehow.
No. It never happened. All right, if 100,000 died, and that may well be correct, the war there and for Bakhmut, which was a backwater little railhead, 100,000 dead, 227 days of combat. What is that? That's 50,000.
It's about seven and a half months.
Yeah. That's about
3 months longer than Stalingrad, I think. Yeah.
And that's 2 5s 10. That's, I think, five. How many a day is that dead? 500 a day? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I've been subscribing and finding you up too, and all kinds of videos and sources back door that don't, never meet the light of day through the mainstream media anywhere. And it's just staggering, the damage and the suffering. I mean, it's just really, really, really something. And it's horrible. And it's absolutely unnecessary.
It's a Zionist plan. They did it. This is a Zionist operation.
Yeah.
They got rid of around 400,000 Ukrainian Christian males dead now in the military. How many wounded?
Yes.
I don't know. Probably close to a million. Those people are out of it. They will not be able to rise up and throw off the yoke of international Zionist Marxist Bolshevism. They can't do it. The bodies are not there anymore. They're all dead.
Yeah, so it's just really interesting. I was just a couple other things I was thinking about, but well, I'll get to that later. But it's just my point is that this is, this is a not ending, and Russia is very determined that they're going to complete their goal, certainly to the Dnieper River. They're going to remove every single evil faction in that country that's been destroying and murdering their own countrymen since 2014 for 7 years unabated, and spreading a litany of crime and torturous behavior and just incredible, inhuman activities of live organ harvesting to child pedophilia trapping throughout the world, everything on the planet, illegal weapons labs and biological labs and everything else. Every single criminal activity you could think of was highly orchestrated and developed there with absolute impunity, has been for the last 25 years under the Zionists. And now
it's a Zionist
playground. It's a Zionist, a giant Disneyland, and Mr. Putin decided he would end that forever, and I am quite convinced he is going to. And now it's up to all the news agencies of the world that are also controlled to try to figure out some way to disavow it, they ever believed in it to begin with, or to deny that, or to make excuses for it, or whatever the case. And that just continues at full tilt. No, but there's the Western world seems to be absolutely, the propaganda of it is so disassociated with any form of reality that it beggars imagination. I had a quote for you that I read, and I would like to I was thinking, since we probably would talk about this, I would just mention it real fast here, okay? So I'll pull it right up.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got this Rents listeners who are interested in precious metals. There are also excellent geopolitical information as well. There's a lovely website, 321gold.com, one of the very best on precious metals and the geopolitics that involve them in the whole planet. It's read by hundreds of thousands of people plus daily in every continent in the world. We actually have a very nice review on that website, which we deeply appreciate, unsolicited. And in any case, the publisher editor of that site is a brilliant Bob Moriarty. He's an ex-Vietnam vet. He put more fighter missions in Vietnam War than any single pilot in the whole war. He holds the record for that, about 2-1. Unbelievable guy. And then became completely anti-war after that, utterly. And has devoted his life to, fighting the military-industrial complex. He's a really amazing guy. Lives in France right now. In any case, at the bottom of his website, he has a quote he puts up every 2 or 3 days. And today's quote, which I thought was really explains, the situation we're in regarding all the just complete obfuscation of the truth by the political parties and by the media. And here he is. It's by Winston Churchill. The truth is incontrovertible. Malice may attack it. Ignorance may deride it. But in the end, there it is. And I think that speaks exactly of what Bakhmut was. It was a total victory for the Russians, hard fought, and they're moving on. And I think that I truly believe that British American Zio world enterprise is not going to be able to defeat this unity of Russia and China. I certainly don't believe so. I think it's absolutely ridiculous even to suggest that it's going to have a chance unless it want to go to nuclear war, which they won't win either. So, in any case, that's enough of my ramblings. We're getting far afield.
We should also point out, Mike, real quick, that Vladimir Putin went on national Russian television and acknowledged the incredible effort that the Wagner PMC,
yes,
Prigozhin's people, made. They literally took Bakhmut. It was them. Russians were behind
them,
with them, but they did it.
Yeah,
it's a private military
company.
Don't forget that. They did.
Yeah, they are, but they're really something else. And very different from the arrogant, what was it, Blackwater people that went around and assassinated civilians and tortured
That's
people
right.
and things for the CIA.
Point.
Completely different mindset. Utterly yeah. different purpose and everything. By the way, saw a very, very, very nice presentation today. And this is right up our alley since we are a precious metal dealer. Certain of the major heroes that were recognized as fighting men were called out in Bakhmut at a special ceremony, and Putin presented through their leaders of the Wagner group a beautiful, personally engraved, pure 1 ounce, 24 karat gold coin celebrating their victory, and they presented to a host of various squad leaders and just regular people had demonstratively heroic action. So they rewarded them not with a little ribbon, but with an ounce of pure gold. And I thought that was it was a nice gesture. You know, it's not a lot, but still,
it's
significant. And
class.
It's classy, very classy. Yeah, which is very different from what this country is. Anything but classy. It's become one of the least classy places going right now. Up here in the Northwest, things continue. Portland is now the dubious distinction of the top 300 of the largest cities in the United States. It's number 6 in population evaporation. People are pouring out of here. And I think they lost about 14,000 people in the city limits, and the bleeding hasn't not even begun to stop. More businesses close all the time. Let's get to a few headlines before we have time to get to the break here. Time to do it. We'll talk about a couple things. Here's some interesting things. Right now, again, the commercial real estate is the banking system are the two things hiding in plain sight. A giant, huge 300-ton gorilla sitting there, King Kongs, that nobody seems to want to talk about. Here's an amazing statistic for your listeners, Jeff. In New York City, the total amount of office space that's available in Manhattan, empty for rent, is equivalent to the entirety of 26 Empire State Buildings. All of
26,
them. All 85, 94s.
That's astonishing.
Yeah, Empire State Building for listeners, the blocks in New York and Manhattan are real big and long. They're gigantic. They're not these little short blocks you find in small little towns. They're huge blocks, enormous. And
probably
the Empire State Building,
long,
granted,
right? At least.
Yeah. They're just huge, and it goes way up. You stand down, I've been up in the Empire State Building, and you stand down at the bottom and look up, and it's, oh my goodness, you know, I don't know why it's 80, 90 stories. Well, there's an equivalency of 26 of those that were essentially fully rented 3 years ago, and now they're completely vacant. So this is an astounding statistic.
Where is this? Is this confined to L.A.? I'm sorry, New York City?
No, that's just to New York alone. That's just in New York City, and not in the Brooklyn either. Just in Manhattan, there's 26 equivalency Empire State Buildings completely empty of office space. It was fully rented
unreal.
3 years ago.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's unreal. And it goes, also other points, there are, incidentally, that comes out to a total of 70. This stuff is just, you know, you just can't make it up. 74.5 million square feet of vacancy. That's a lot of square feet, boys and girls. I mean, you know what I mean? Just incredible. But it's not just in New York. This article goes on. Chicago has 59.863 million square feet, almost right at 60 million square feet. Los Angeles, 44 million square feet. San Francisco with 19 million, et cetera. These are just commercial office buildings.
Okay.
Yeah,
and many of those spaces may never be occupied.
This does not include shopping malls or a whole lot of these strip malls that only one out of six or seven things are occupied, like you see in Portland and places like that. No, these are just office buildings alone. It's actually way worse than that, and it's huge and gigantic, and nobody seems to want to pay much attention to it. But it continues. And again, every one of those buildings, or the equivalency thereof, is a dagger through the heart of whoever lent the money to buy those buildings or to maintain those buildings. One thing about real estate loans, commercial real estate loans, because most people don't know, have very short amortizations. They're not done for 30-year notes at all. They're done on normally about three to 6 years, an average maybe 4.5 or 5 years.
How do they structure that? Go ahead.
Just like this. It's a great, great question. Here's how they do it. They're just they're call loans basically. Oh, they're good for 5 years, and then you just pay interest on that. Basically interest only. There's way too short a term to amortize and to have anything paid down in principal almost at all. You know, on a 30-year note, after you pay on it for 20 years, you still owe like a 93% less or something. Of the principal. It's just that's another racket for another day. We'll talk about. But anyway. So they're basically just swing loans for like bridge loans for 5 years, and then the people go back and just refinance again. And of course, they write them in that the refinancing will be at whatever the current rate is, and they'll go, yeah, it's fine. And since the rates have done nothing but go down here for the last 40 years since the 1980s, and all through the Ben Bernanke and Alan Greenspan free money printing since 2000, when the NASDAQ collapsed up to last year when they decided they had to start raising rates again because inflation was going completely insane, out of control. This transitory inflation is only going to stick around for a couple months, they said. Of course, that was another lie. And so, you know, this thing just continues here. It's just amazing. So all these guys just roll them over. These companies just take out a loan they get money to own the building. That's lovely. And they rent it out for a profit. And the people that rent there, they have businesses there or offices, that's a pretty good deal. And then this revolves around, and about 5 years, you just do it again. It just goes on indefinitely that way. It just goes on forever. They're never fully ever paid off and on free and clear, almost never. It's just a continual leasing, really, in a way. You're making lease payments on this building, and the final analysis is almost like that. So what I'm saying is, there's a whole host of banks that have made these loans that are not getting paid or not going to get paid, and the value of their collateral, the loans they made by rights then goes to zero, but of course it will not go to zero legally, although technically that's the case. It will be, those are allowed to be, as we've spoken many times in your program before, those loans are allowed to be kept on the book at full value. That's a lie. The general accounting regulations, GAO, that every other business in the Western Hemisphere, and actually in the world just about, has to agree to, the banks don't have to do that. That was massaged and changed for their benefit back in 2009 under the Dodd-Frank Act by Barney Frank, the very strange member of the House
God.
There from the, yes, yes,
that
the very gay Barney. Yeah, he's the one that cooked this all up. Oh, incidentally, on one of these banks that collapsed, I think it was Signature, guess what? Barney Frank was the director of that bank. Most people don't know that. And of course, it was suffering from the very same problems he was trying to avoid. So some part of his legislation was to allow banks to carry non-performing loans to full market value in their reporting every year. And so it was his legislation that actually caused the demise of that bank, and was taken over by the FDIC. And he was and the person that spurned this devil's legislation relation was actually a director of that bank. Isn't that just lovely, man? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. You know what I mean, Jeff? It's just like, it's incredible. You couldn't make it up. I mean, it's something that just, the hubris of these people is truly imbalanced. I mean, it's they have no conscience. We've established that a long time ago, but it goes beyond that somehow. You know, I don't know. No shame either, I might add. It just doesn't exist in their vocabulary. Okay, another couple points real fast to get before you get the break, we'll cover. Goldman finds that the reading of current commercial real estate conditions right now, and there's two ways to do it. One is sales models, but there's not many being sold. And then the other thing is what they call the Green Street Indicator, which I don't go into details. I studied up on what it meant, but it's too hard to explain, but it's real accurate. And what they conclude is that the value of all office space in the United States in the last 12 months from May to May has dropped 25% year over year. And apartment building values have dropped 21%. That's across the board nationwide. That is gigantic. And by the way, we didn't even start raising rates till the spring of last year. So this, I mean, there's a lot of always catching up to those raising rates. The real pain comes later. It's not, it happened while it was happening, but now that this becomes more permanent, these higher rates, the pain gets a lot deeper than what it did on the way to where we are right now. So we're submitting that these ratios and these figures are going to get way worse in the next 12 months. Till spring of 2024. That's what we are predicting that here at Liberty Gold and Silver. That's going to be a real bummer. Another thing that's amazing, we've got a break here in a minute. I'll sneak it in here real fast. Here's something else. Commercial real estate transactions in the fourth quarter, that's a sales, you know, buildings, in the fourth quarter of 2021, and that's about a year and a half ago, they were sitting at somewhere about, I'm looking at a bar graph of this, of about 375 transactions, and those are buildings in the 100 million plus category, you know, maybe 200, 300 million, whatever.
Who's
more.
Who's buying these, Mike? Wait, who's buying these buildings? Are they foreign? Investors?
A lot of hedge funds, big Blackwater, huge guys that have assets. Companies with assets under management of like $10, $12 trillion, Templeton Fund, people like that buy these things, okay? Well, they buy them because they're steady income. They roll these leases over, they just keep renting them out, and they make a cash flow on it. In any case, this quarter, those transactions dropped from 375 down to 61. Looks about 60 or according to this graph. So they've fallen by 5-6 in a year and a half, the amount of transactions. So, and this is just down just really, really low. We have to go clear back to about 2012 when the market was just picking up coming out of the 2008 financial crisis. So we've gone back here, 16 years in time to that level. But the chart is falling knife on this bar graph, going down at about an 75 degree slope straight down. It's going to be a lot less this quarter. I mean, they're going to be going to zero here pretty soon. I mean, it's just no doubt about it.
Wow. All right. The commercial real estate world is in obviously on life support. It's going down. I don't know how these buildings could ever recover. How could they be repaired in terms of tenancy? Where is it going to come from? Who's going to go into these cities?
Oh, we could convert these things to apartments.
Well, that's what I've been saying for the last several years. The only obvious long-term outcome is to convert these into inner-city freebies for invaders, for homeless, for low-income. That's what they'll do. They'll put a communal bathroom at the end of the hall if they have to, but each room.
Yeah, they're going to have to do that because there's no way There's no way that you can bring plumbing to concrete poured floors on steel.
But you got to remember, every office suite
you,
will
you
have
need a crew of 4,000 jackhammers working for 400 years to be able to redo that.
Yes. You know? The only thing they'll have to do is put showers in, and they could do that with box
stall showers and communal bathrooms with a communal kitchen in some space. That's all they're going to be able to do. They're not going to be able to put living quarters. These are going to be barracks, fundamentally, is what they're going to do. Last little thing before the break, I think the music is going to be coming right now. Downtown San Francisco, I was reading this, another article with Julie Hedge, Miss Shedlock, actually, a really good guy, talking just down Market, about on 14 blocks on Market Street from the bay there, going west. There has been about, showing a map here, I counted, there's 29 in just the last 9 months or so, there's been about 30 major national detailers, Saks Fifth Avenue, Nordstrom's Rack, Abercrombie and Fitch, just on and on and on, have left the city, all the bookstores, and these are just the big national huge chains. There is literally thousands more of small businesses, mom and pop shops, sandwich shops, all gone. Just there's no business at all to support them. This map's just amazing, just loaded with all these institutions, and that's just been really got going solidly in the last year and a half. It's just vaporizing the city business core. Just gone.
Very good. All right, stand by. Mike McGill and I will be right back on this Tuesday night. Hold on. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Mike McGill, Liberty Gold and the Silver.com, our favorite precious metals business in all of these formerly United States, located in the Great Pacific Northwest. We won't mention any particular city, but these
Thank
are the
you.
People you want to go to. Yes, no. That must be awful.
I don't want to associate that anymore.
I know.
Well, speaking of cities, Jeff, a couple of other things that is happening here, reporting that there is in all major cities in the United States, there has been a dramatic decline in ridership in public transportation.
I can't imagine
that
why.
That is down, on average, 70% from the pre-pandemic traffic. 70%. They're hemorrhaging. Well, now, these cities, they have massive loss of revenues. They're talking about trying to get special legislation from the Biden administration, this new bill, to get money to help all these cities that are stuck tens of millions of dollars in their transportation system. They're already talking about cutting routes and, raising city taxes to pay for it and to maybe doubling fares. But the people that ride public transportation, they can't afford to double their fares to pay for that. So there's nothing you can make up for. Nobody wants to ride transportation in dangerous cities. They never talk about that either. These transportation systems, at least in Portland and other places, can be deadly. As I'm saying, is they've had in Portland, the fentanyl problem has been so severe that essentially every some days they have to stop a train because somebody's been using fentanyl in the train, quarantine the car, take all the passengers out, have them check for health, and under hazmat suits have a team go in and antiseptically clean the complete car, stopping the whole rail transportation for a couple of hours on that line before the train is sent down the tracks. This is becoming a regular, a weekly ordeal here in the Rose City of Portland. So the same thing, you look at the, there's a lovely quote with this failure of the transportation system. The head of the New York Metropolitan Transit, whatever he is, what his name was, and his name is Gino Lieber, and he had a quote for the ages here. It said, he runs the nation's largest system, the article reads. He said, we really struggle to provide basic, pretty good service to commuters to the point where they were able to convince state lawmakers to provide recurring revenue in the state budget. So basic pretty good service is where the riders have to physically subdue insane people and put them in a chokehold. They have to do it themselves because there's certainly no police or transit authorities to do that for them anymore. Riding in the New York subway is one of the most dangerous things you can do in the United States, about as bad as being in Bakhmut right now. So he's saying that they've basically done a pretty good job, he said, in New York, in the transit system. Yeah, it's not bad. If anybody's ridden in the New York City transit system, I've ridden many years back from 1976, and to be honestly speaking, it was a sewer and dangerous then. It's a sewer and psychotically dangerous now, would be my assessment. I've ridden it in various times through about four different decades, and it was ugly and beat up, nasty, dirty, filthy, and out of control then, and it's that way now as well. But a lot more dangerous. A lot more dangerous. Especially if they're cutting the police force dramatically in big cities. They just don't have enough people to police it. And so that just gives all the outlaws just free reign. So there you go on that. So we're talking about public transportation and chaos. What else can we say? Oh, Yellen is warning again, Janet Yellen, our illustrious Secretary of the Treasury, that if the Congress, as you said about 2 days ago, does not get this debt ceiling passed by June 1st, she is warning of, quote, economic chaos throughout the world.
Who is this again? Who is this?
Janet Yellen, our illustrious...
Okay, the old lady. I thought it was
old
maybe an
grandma,
assistant.
The babushka.
Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Economic world chaos, she's saying, if we do not pass this. And they're just screaming to do it. And, of course, all these politicians are trying to get their special cuts. The Biden administration says they absolutely will not relent. They want all new spending bills of trillions or more for social programs, everything from, tranny library classes and everything else. Anything insane and worthless you can think of. All new money for green energy and just everything on the planet. And accordingly, they're not going to budge at all. And they're saying there's not even one. I'm listening tonight before the show, reading just a recent YouTube. They can't get them to commit a single, a reduction in spending. They just want more programs, more spending, more taxation, more borrowing, period. I'm not saying the Republicans are much better at all, but they seem there's a little bit of reality in that group. But the party of chaos, the Democrats, seemingly right now will not budge. I will say here's how bad it is, Jeff.
People
are so worried that the one-month treasuries, which come due in June, those rates were a little over a year ago, were paying like, half a percent interest, 1%, 1.75%. They've gone up over 6%. Maybe they'll take it, the way this is going, in the next week they could hit 7 or 8% for the short-term treasuries. Why? Because people are so freaked out. The big buyers of these treasuries around the world, other sovereign wealth funds, but other governments, they're too freaked out. They don't know what's going to happen. So they're saying, here's the deal. We're going to demand outrageous short-term interest for these things because we don't have any confidence that the United States is going to hold it together and extend this debt ceiling. They just might not. And if that doesn't happen, it's going to be 35 nuclear Hiroshima's going off in every major financial center in every country in the world if that happens. Probably the odds are still betting that it's not going to happen. But here's the point. It's never got this contentious this late without a single bit of even suggestion of either of these sides mitigating their positions at all. So, I mean, this country's, this government and world banking system is all based on Ponzi fraud of debt energized and initiated money into the circulation. That's how they work. It all has to fail that model eventually anyhow because it was designed as a criminal enterprise from its conception back in 1913. But nevertheless, still, it has never been this sketchy because we're getting at the very end of a very, very, very long confidence game. And this World Reserve currency is teetering. Here's another point, Jeff, I read. Speaking of world reserve currency, how people are leading the U.S. dollar. Okay, so let's talk about this real fast. Here's a little article. I just happened to see tangentially, and I looked it up today. And let me just pull it up here. I think it's right here. Is this it?
You know, I want to make a quick aside here.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to raise the debt ceiling. I think they're going to let this thing temporarily crash. They're going to stop all Social Security payments.
I think they want to outrage the public.
Yeah, that's my thought.
I think they
want the whole thing to look vulnerable, weak, and collapsible, which it is.
Yeah.
And it is being pushed down. Who do we owe this money to? That's the other question that no American on the street would be able to answer.
They're not going
to the international Zionism. Who they owe it to?
So
the Federal Reserve is a Zionist banking scam.
It was designed by. Yeah, so here's just an amazing thing that happened. I just read this little article. By the way, you know, I used to live in the Midwest for 7 years, and one of the biggest sources of income for states like Iowa, Nebraska, especially those two, and also southern and western Illinois, Indiana, and all that, is corn, growing corn. Okay? So now, here comes this neat little article that just said that China is one of the biggest importers of corn from the United States, one of the hugest purchaser of all this corn. Well, China has just announced that they're going to start moving their corn purchasing to Brazil. There's four or five articles I had up here. Four or five of them didn't go into detail at all. And I had one that was excellent. And of course, I can't find it, but something like 92 million tons or something, some incredible amount of corn, they have just announced that they're going to be transacting that those purchases, which are annual purchases, large allotments from the United States, are now going to be done entirely through Brazil. They're just cutting off those contracts and saying, you know what, I don't think we're going to buy any more of your stuff. You're threatening to declare war with us over here in the Straits of Taiwan. I think we just won't buy any corn anymore. And guess what? We're going to transact that currency, Brazil, in Chinese yuan. And by the way, Chinese yuan can be used directly to purchase gold on the newer Shanghai Gold Exchange. You can take what you want and buy physical metal and hold it in storage. You can have it to your own domicile, wherever you'd like it. So this is an incredible little side news. It's not getting any traction in the media. Just a blurb. I had to look kind of hard to find this. I just saw it scanned on something, and what? I never heard that reported, but yes, that's going on. That's happening right now. And nobody acts like, that's no big deal. Well, you know what? If you're a big grain growing consortium, a lot of grain growers use co-ops. They're out here in Oregon. There's huge cooperatives of farmers from 50, 75 miles around take it down to the co-ops, like in the Dalles and the Columbia River. And that's what they do. They do the same thing with corn. Well, suddenly these people's contracts are expecting to do all their planting. They use those contracts to buy seed and finance their next year cultivation and pay the notes on the land and everything else. It's all, of course, indebted. Well, suddenly, guess what? There's no buyer. The big boy China said sayonara to that, and that's what's going on. So that's an amazing little thing. It's critically important, and nobody's paying attention to it at all. It's just like, wow. So this de-dollarization against the world reserve currency and its hegemonic government continues apace at lightning speed. I don't think anybody's giving him credit to how fast this is happening. Most of the so-called stated experts said it'll be decades and decades before the United States world reserve currency has any other viable suitor. It's just too ensconced. It's just too deep. No, people just couldn't walk away with it. Well, You know what? We think we call BS on that. We don't think that's true. We think this could happen like a Berlin Wall collapse. When it gets going, it's like we're done with you. And maybe we're wrong on that. I don't know, but we don't see it that way. We think it's just the opposite. Well, if this, getting back to this debt fiasco with our treasury and our unpayable $31.5 trillion debt, by the way, our interest payment from now on is going to be almost $1 trillion a year with these higher, just on that alone we're paying for that.
Interest. It's unbelievable. Mike said interest
just on
only.
The interest
no
alone
principle.
On the
okay.
debt. Not on the principal, not anything. And we have to borrow more every year to do it. We're borrowing money to pay. We're borrowing money to pay the interest, if you get it.
Pay the interest.
I mean, this is just...
It's insane. It's beyond fiscal irresponsibility.
It's beyond insane.
It's insane.
It's beyond irresponsible. It's criminal. In any case...
That's how it was set up, dear friends, 1913, Christmas
Eve. Yes, it was.
That's how it was set up by our Congress, who was bribed and paid off to pass the Federal Reserve Act. Not federal.
Yes, it was.
It's a fraud.
Not federal. There's no reserves, and it's not federal. It is neither. As Federal Reserve is the greatest oxymoron that was ever created. No doubt about it. Here's a couple of interesting little things that are really important. I think it was Michael Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog. He just mentioned that the three banks we bailed out already for the tune of, I think, about $585 billion. By the way, so-called the Federal Reserve is, you know, the quantitative tightening starting last April, $85 billion a year. They're pulling money out of the money supply. Well, through this bailout of these three banks, they put that all back in essence. So that was just a non sequitur. And the money spent on that was more than the total of the 25 banks adjusted for inflation was more than the 25 banks that collapsed in 2008. Just three of them. So three of them did the same damage that 25 created back in 2008 banking collapse. There's nothing serious. Now we move on to the next point. And this is probably the most important one of the whole program. So listen up, everybody. I'm just kidding. Here is comments by Professor, I'll get his name here. He wrote an opinion piece. Believe it or not, the New York Times somehow actually published this. Maybe it's because his name is Professor Amit Seru, S-E-R-U. He is a tenured PhD finance professor at Stanford University. He's also a major contributor and influencer of the Hoover Institute, which is kind of the Council of Foreign Relations light here for the West Coast. It's whereas the Council of Foreign Relations is the blue bloods of the East. Well, the Leland Stanford group there, the Hoover Institute, is the Western version of that. He said, here's what he said recently in the New York Times just a few days ago. Yes, you should be worried about a potential bank crisis. Here is why. The fragility and collapse of several high-profile banks are most likely not an isolated phenomenon, he said. A damaging combination of fast-rising interest rates, major changes in work patterns, and the potential of recession could prompt a credit crunch not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. Then he goes on. And he said, based on his calculations, okay, in the United States right now, there are almost half of America's 4,800 banks are suffering market asset losses or insolvency of over $2.5 trillion. All right, so that's basically half the banks in the United States, he's saying, are functionally insolvent right now.
Right now.
Right now. Yeah. Now, there's another thing I'd like to bring up here. There's also, in this country, about equal as many credit unions as there are banks.
Right. That's
altogether,
this is important. Everyone listen now. This is banks
now,
and credit unions.
Now, this is critical. Here's our point on this. Right now, credit unions are talked about in glowing terms, and some that's probably correct. We use one, and they seem to be extremely well managed, very polite, and work with you very nicely, and we like them.
Right.
But that's not really the issue. The issue is, Where is their money invested, these banks? Where is it? I haven't heard anything about it. Well, you know what? Back in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, up through the collapse in the late 80s and 90s, savings and loans functioned almost like a credit union. They were all basically local. The money, everybody thought the money was fine. They just were making simple loans down at the barber shop or to put a new roof on Uncle Fred's barn or something like that. Yeah. Guess what? They had been scammed completely by members of the Bush family. The losses on that were into the mega billions of dollars. There were hundreds of thousands, millions of homes that were lost through that. And you know, there was over 3,000 savings and loans that went bankrupt during that period. 3,000. Well, it seems to me our feeling is that people should maybe be looking at these credit unions a lot more stringently than they have been. Because I would venture to guess that they've made loans in some capacities than just like the banks have. We know there's some credit unions have grown. They've had one or two offices in our communities up here. A few years later, they have 20, 25 of them. They're everywhere. So they know raising money, and they got to put it somewhere. What are they laying it out on? What is their risk basis? How much equity do they have in their bank if there's any kind of a bank run? I mean, all these banks borrow short and lend long. And they can get away with that because they don't expect people to come to the bank all at one time, or even 10% of the people want their money at one time.
Yeah, I get it. Okay. We're almost out of time. We are out of time, but go ahead. So what should we do about our favorite credit union? Pull out and go to a commercial bank?
My feeling is check them out real thoroughly. You know, go ask to see their books. Go see their income statement. See where they put it right down there. They're supposed to where their loans are made. How much equity they have? Where is their net worth? What's their balance sheet? Take a look at it. I would say that's a good. You should just do that. It's not a bad idea. I haven't heard a single peep about that. Anybody talking about anywhere on anything on the planet at all? Not a note on it. And I just think that that's probably something that should be investigated. I'm saying don't take it for granted just because they're doing a seem to be a little more honest job than our banks have. Don't automatically assume that there's no problems there. I think that would be a profound mistake.
They have a clean and squeaky reputation among a lot of people. They do. They're just not looked at as the same ilk of our normal commercial banking.
They are. And I mean, I'm not trying to suggest that they are. I'm just simply saying is, you know, most people, if you get older, like a lot of the listeners are here, do is, guys, you can't afford one day to find out that the $300,000 you have in a credit union got taken, and you're allowed to be able to get like $500 a month for it for the rest of your life, the most you can ever take out.
There should be, I don't know, maybe some organization could go around to banks and credit unions and do this, have a whole regiment of
the FDIC is supposed to do that, and they've done a terrible job. They've actually been chartered to go in and see and actually check the profiles of the lending, and they didn't do it at all at all those banks in California. They just screwed that up. They're just absolutely incompetent. They are.
So, thank you, Mike. Yeah, give the phone number real quick.
So we'll make it real fast. Our number is 888-751-3330, 888-751-3330. Shout out to both of our fine newer clients in Arkansas, thank Northern Arkansas, and also from the capital there. Thank you very much, people. And folks, give us a call. And thanks, Jeff, for everything you do for us. We appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, Mike. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, thank you. And we will be right back with hour two next.